its second significant partnership within a month, movie on demand service provider Cinema Now inked a pact with Universal Studios Pay-Per-View for a 4-month test of pay-per-view and library titles on demand delivery. Cinema Now, which faces what many analysts deem to be a tough task in competing with the industry-led MovieLink, will offer such titles as the comedy Big Fat Liar, the action-packed The Scorpion King, and the French art horror film Brotherhood of the Wolf. The service offers pay-for-view movies in Windows Media 9 series format that can be downloaded and watched in Microsoft's player, and may also be viewed via television with pay-for-view satellite or cable. New releases sell for $3.99 and older films for $2.99. These films will appear on Cinema Now during the traditional pay-for-view windows in November. While those are newer films, movie lovers may also delve into the Universal stockpile for anything from classic Hitchcock thriller Psycho to Erin Brockovich may be downloaded to their TV. Cinema Now, which inked a similar deal with Warner Home Video in September, will offer the films in both streaming and downloadable formats. In the Warner deal, Cinema Now is offering such films as Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone at $3.99 for a 24-hour access period, Alfred Hitchcock's classic Dial M for Murder, and Tim Burton's Mars Attack are offered for download for the same viewing period. Microsoft is putting the finishing touches on the second release candidate or near-final testing version of Windows.NET Server 2003, sources said. The clock is ticking for Windows.NET Server 2003, an operating system that is used to run high-end computers that manage everything from checking passwords to keeping track of a corporate payroll. The new system is also the foundation of Microsoft's .NET Web Services initiative, geared to power advanced internet operations. The number of broadband users in Britain has hit the 1 million mark at last. The millionth customer of high-speed net access was connected up in the last week, according to the Department of Trade and Industry. The numbers of people and businesses signing up for broadband has trebled since the start of 2002. Oftel estimates that 20,000 connections per week are being installed now. Before now, many studies have shown that Britain has lagged behind the US and much of Europe in the numbers of people signed up to the speedy services. According to a recent report from the NPD Group, 69% of US consumers plan to spend the same amount of money during the 2002 holiday season that they did in 2001. Another 29% say they'll spend less, and just 12% plan to spend more in the 2002 holiday. The average amount consumers plan to spend during the 2002 holiday season is $661. NPD surveyed 5,000 members of its NPD online panel between the 17th and the 24th of September 2002. The survey determined that 69% of respondents cite value as their main factor determining how they will shop during the holiday season. Additionally, over 50% cite a hassle-free return as being an important factor. And interestingly, 45% say they want to shop in a safe environment. NPD also notes that 40% of US consumers say they will shop online this holiday season. Federal regulators gave the go-ahead last Thursday for digital radio in the United States, approving a plan to modernize the medium with better sound and new features for personalized programming. The Federal Communications Commission voted 4-0 to adopt digital radio technology created by Ubiquiti Digital, a company backed by large broadcasters including ABC and Viacom. The commissioners enthusiastically endorsed the technology, saying it will benefit the industry and consumers. The FCC did express concern that the new technology could adversely affect radio reading services, but hoped that the industry would resolve this issue. The approval allows radio stations to immediately begin broadcasting digital signals, though it probably will take a few months for the first stations to start. Manufacturers plan to sell digital receivers for car stereos and high-end audio systems starting next year, adding about $100 to the price of a traditional unit. It's unclear how soon digital technology will be included in portable radios. The Ibiquity technology, which differs from the standard already used in Europe, allows broadcasters to use their existing airwaves to simultaneously send digital and analog signals. Listeners won't have to buy a new radio to continue listening to their favourite stations, but they can if they want better sound and other options. Supporters say the new technology will bring CD-quality sound to FM broadcasts, an end to static for AM, and new data features. Radio One, which owns and operates 65 stations and primarily targets black listeners, already has ordered digital transmitters, said John Matthews, the company's director of engineering. He said the company plans to start digital broadcasting within 3 months in Atlanta, Boston, Dallas, Detroit, and Los Angeles. Some digital car stereos will have small screens displaying news, advertising, or pictures of the artist whose song is being played. Others will allow listeners to choose when to hear reports on stocks, sports, weather, and traffic. The digital broadcasts will be free, unlike the subscriber services offered by Sirius Satellite Radio and XM Satellite Radio Holdings, which beam music and talk to radios from satellites. Digital broadcasts use the same language as computers, a series of on and off electronic pulses. Broadcasts of the proposed technology won't increase a radio station's range, but digital signals can be cleaned up, removing garble and uneven reception. Bowing to criticism, Microsoft has backed off a copyright protection scheme that would have restricted the use of TV programs recorded on computers that run an upcoming version of the Windows XP operating system. Windows XP Media Center Edition, which is to be installed on a new line of Hewlett-Packard personal computers later this year, would have encrypted recordings so that they could only be played on the PC that recorded the program. After details of Microsoft's original plan emerged last month, consumer advocates criticized the system as being more restrictive than traditional technology such as videotape recorders, which let viewers make personal copies of TV shows and watch them on another set. Now, consumers will be able to burn recorded programs onto DVDs to watch on other computers and, by the end of the year, on standalone players. The recordings also will be transferable over the internet, though that would not be easy given the size of most video files. The software still will support the copy generation management system, which, if restrictions were encoded into a broadcast, would bar the user from sharing the DVD recording. Less than 1% of all broadcast content is currently encoded with CGMS restrictions. BT Open World in Britain has admitted that it has so far failed to process any orders as part of a demand-led initiative to convert exchanges to DSL. The broadband pre-registration system was put in place earlier this year by BT Wholesale to measure demand for broadband in areas that aren't currently served by DSL. The idea is that if enough people commit to buying broadband, BT Wholesale will convert the exchange to DSL. This hasn't happened, and a BT spokesperson says this is now being corrected. Intel's Itanium and Itanium 2 microprocessors use technology developed by computer source firm Intergraph, a judge ruled on Thursday, a decision that could cost the world's biggest semiconductor manufacturer as much as $250 million. A U.S. federal court ruled that Intel had infringed on two patents held by Intergraph. Intergraph's lawsuit contended that Intel had violated patents covering so-called parallel instruction computing, or PIC. The PIC technology is used in Itanium chips, which are designed for high-end, heavy-duty computing, and crunch data in 64-bit chunks compared with 32-bit chunks crunched by Intel's Pentium processors. In his ruling, Judge T. John Ward of the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Texas in Marshall, Texas, found that both Intergraph's patents are valid and enforceable. Intel respectfully disagrees with the judge's ruling, said Intel spokesman Chuck Malloy, who noted the ruling is not yet final, and Intel plans to file a motion for reconsideration. If Intel doesn't prevail there, Malloy said, Intel plans to appeal the decision. Intel had settled in April 2002 a 1997 Intergraph suit for $300 million relating to alleged patent infringements on Intergraph's Clipper chip technology, allegedly used in Intel's Pentium chips. As part of that settlement, both sides agreed to break off the allegations related to 64-bit technology and try that case separately. If Intel loses the motion for reconsideration, it must pay $150 million to Intergraph under the terms of the April settlement, Malloy said. If Intel appeals and loses, it must pay an additional $100 million to license Intergraph's technology. America Online has released the latest version of its popular online service, which the company hopes will be the jolt it needs to reverse its sagging fortunes. AOL 8.0 is now available within the online company's proprietary service. Subscribers can download AOL 8 by typing upgrade into the keyword box, where a window appears to walk people through the process. An international standards team is close to approving a new compression format for digital video, promising improvements as well as a few uncertainties for emerging multimedia technology. Known as H.264, among other designations, the new format is turning heads over claims that it can deliver DVD-quality broadcasts over the internet using considerably fewer network resources than rivals. The new format was created by the Joint Video Team, a unique partnership between the ISO, MPEG, and International Telecommunications Union standards groups. It should be ratified as part of the MPEG-4 Moving Pictures Expert Group Multimedia Standard by year's end. Compressing bulky data files is key for delivery of video online and onto wireless devices, two markets long coveted by media companies but effectively ruled out in part because of cost and quality issues. Although that doesn't mean average consumers will begin seeing DVD quality streaming over standard broadband connections anytime soon, it sets an important performance benchmark when compared with other formats. The data savings realized in H.264, also known as MPEG-4 Advanced Video Coding, AVC, could speed internet and wireless video on-demand services. It could prove valuable for cable operators who want to broadcast more channels over their pipes and publishers that seek to create more and higher quality video files on digital media, such as DVDs. Those industries, for now, typically use the older MPEG-2 video standard, which is up to four times bulkier. H.264 also promises a 33% improvement over video formats currently implemented under MPEG-4. While few doubt the power of the new format, its emergence could complicate the landscape for MPEG-4's video format offerings, which presently consist of two implementations, Simple Profile, SP, and Advanced Simple Profile, ASP. Despite advantages over its predecessors in raw compression power, H.264 may not wind up as the simple replacement for SP and ASP. That's because H.264 is built on a new architecture that requires considerably more processing power than the generation of video compression formats now in use, making it less efficient in energy-sensitive applications that run on battery power, such as handheld devices and camcorders. In addition, H.264 isn't backwards compatible, meaning software written for older MPEG-4 formats, including SP and ASP, won't automatically support it. Upgrading the older software to support the new format would be relatively painless, but it could cause problems for consumers and companies forced to keep track of multiple formats. Microsoft has issued a patch for a buffer overflow flaw in Outlook Express and its S/MIME parsing functions that compromises the security of the email software. A security bulletin from Microsoft said the S/MIME define code used to verify the authenticity of emails sent with Outlook Express contains a flaw that allows an attacker to create a digitally signed email and exploit the buffer overflow. The security flaw, which does not affect the Microsoft Outlook email client, could cause Outlook Express to execute malicious code on a victim's PC. Redmond put a critical rating on the vulnerability and said both Outlook Express 5.5 and 6.0 versions are affected. It said the vulnerability only affects messages signed with the /MIME function and sent to an Outlook Express user. Microsoft doesn't provide details on the cause of the vulnerability, but said an attacker could introduce specific data via the /MIME encryption method, then sending it to another user. In the more serious case, the attacker could cause the mail client to run code of their choice on the user's machine. Such code could take any desired action, limited only by the permissions of the recipient on the machine, it said. Outlook Express runs in the context of the user. Exploiting this vulnerability could, in the worst-case scenario, allow an attacker to run arbitrary code in the context of the user's privileges only. Any restrictions on the user's account would apply to the attacker's code, Microsoft said. And on that cheery note, that's News Briefs for this week.